This is Jenny Allen, and you are listening to the Made for This podcast. Well, guys, you are going to love today's episode. She comes to me actually through, though I should know her books, and many of you have probably heard of her. First, one of my good friends, word of mouth, often how we find out about things. Lindsay Meyer was like, Jenny, you need to have Andy Kober, who is a therapist and also has written these two great books, on your podcast. And so I checked her out and I couldn't believe I haven't had her on yet. So y'all are going to love this. We're going to talk about noticing. This week, we're talking about noticing our bodies, noticing our emotions. And she is a trauma therapist. She is a Jesus lover. She actually works with EMDR and body-centered healing. And so you're perfect for this, Andy. We're so glad you're here. And you live in Colorado, and what a great place to be from. So let's talk about your book. So Strong Like Water was the most recent one. And I love your messages in your books, which are basically, both of them are kind of this idea of don't try so hard. I'm a big fan of that. Like, this doesn't have to be so hard. So talk just a little bit about that message for you and where that came from.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And actually, we moved from Colorado just about a year and a half ago, but Colorado will always have a huge place in my heart. We live in Grand Rapids now, so it's sort of a newer move, but both places I really love. And yeah, this message, I sometimes joke, I feel like my book titles sort of like are these like paradoxical. I sort of love it when it makes people pause a little bit and be like, wait, like, what is she saying?
That's a good title. Yeah.
I love that. And so, yeah, both Try Softer and Strong Like Water, there's sort of a sense of, in some ways, they're almost like two sides of the same coin. And I think for me, you know, there's this combination of, part of my story is I'm a survivor of complex trauma from my childhood. And one of the parts of, you know, my own healing was, I mean, a couple of things. First, I really didn't understand the level of my own trauma until I even was well into seminary. I was even starting to get into my training as a therapist before, because it had been so normal. And that's what's so confusing, is when something is your normal, you don't know something different. But part of the way that I survived my life and my childhood was I was really good at trying hard. Like, I was an expert white knuckler, to the point that I think people did not know like what that was happening and really what it cost me, what that felt like. I think, you know, even from like a body centered perspective, from a nervous system perspective, I got really good. You know, I think of it a little bit like it was an armor, you know, it was a way that I adapted to some really profound trauma and chaos and pain. And so part of how I think about that is, you know, on one side, that I'm so grateful that God designed our bodies to adapt, because I don't know what I would have done in the absence of, you know, my body working to find a way to survive. You know, it gave me some way through. And not to say I'm not grateful for the trauma, but I feel like I see God's hand in sort of like the ability that we can adapt when we need to.
It gives the people a lot of hope to hear that, even.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people just in the middle of it that can't see any good out of it. So.
And it's one of those things, you know, I try to handle with a lot of nuance, right? Because people are in so many different places. And so my books are really this outworking of both my work personally as a survivor of trauma, but also as a clinical therapist. And my specialty is in trauma and body-centered work. Because I really reached a point in my own training that I realized that words were only getting me so far. And
dang it.
I know. And so it's been this outworking of a shift to say, what would it look like?
So where we are right now in this conversation about emotions is we're talking about noticing our bodies, and we're talking about noticing what are our emotions trying to tell us. But it starts, I mean, it really is the first step to notice what's going on. But like you, I think so many people cope or conceal it or try to control it. And so talk just a little bit about that first time in your life where you go, I can't ignore this anymore. Like, I've got to stop and notice what's happening inside of me.
Well, I think that one, a really pivotal moment for me, and there were certainly some times before this, but I think I had graduated from college, and through college, I had been a collegiate athlete. I played basketball, was very successful. Like it was a way, that was one of the ways that I think my white knuckling expressed itself, you know, and I'm great. Like there's parts of that that I'm super grateful for. But when I graduated college, it was sort of like a lot of the things that had been working for me weren't there anymore. It felt like my armor cracked. And so I was at this particular phase where I actually was engaged to be married. And, but at that same time, my family was, my parents were beginning to go through a very contentious divorce. And it was just like lots of things that sort of had been, they had been dysfunctional, but they were at least functional.
Yeah.
What began to happen is that they stopped functioning. And so I remember this moment, and it's actually at the beginning of Strong Like Water. You know, I was at a point in my life where there weren't really many people that I felt like I could truly name like how much I was hurting. But one thing I used to do, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I grew up right next to the Pacific Ocean, and I would go and I would drive, and there was this time. So I had called off this engagement. I was going to go to law school and realize that wasn't what I was going to do. My parents were getting a divorce, and I'm sitting next to the ocean, and I just feel utterly like I got no other way through. Like, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
And that was a time when I began to realize, like, this can't be the only way. Like there's gotta be, it was like the emotions were so big and so heavy. I almost couldn't name them all. There were too many.
Do you think that all of that time that you were processing that trauma or not processing it, that all those emotions were there and they just, you did a great job with them? And I say great job, meaning impressive that you could hold them in that long. Not that we, any of us should be doing that, right?
Sure. Yeah. I think in the absence of enough care and safety in my life, I found a way to sometimes disconnect from my body. So that would be called therapeutically, that's called dissociating. Sometimes it would mean expressing, like, because I was afraid of the emotion, it might mean just like hyperachieving or over-accommodating.
Wow.
And so there was a way in which it was always about navigating, trying to figure out how to not feel what was there. And so when I got to that day at the ocean, it was like all the things that had helped me not feel it, they were like not available to me anymore.
So do you consider that moment terrifying, a gift? Where does it fall?
When I look back at that moment, I have profound compassion for myself. I look at that, you know, what was I, 22 years old, really having no idea the level of trauma I had experienced in my life. And looking at like the ways that I had really valiantly done, you know, and I say like, I think my body, she did all she could to help me figure out a way to just keep functioning, to get some of my needs met. But our bodies, we're finite. We're fragile. We can only do that for so long. And so I look at that from a place of, yeah, I mean, I think it's not so much a gift as a honoring of just like, yep, that makes sense that that happened that way. I didn't have a lot of other choice. And that, but that moment was a moment when something began to really shift in me, in my own feeling of, I don't know how, but I have to find a different way.
You know, I just, you know what I pictured when you were just sharing all that? Thank you for sharing all that, by the way. I pictured a 22-year-old that's listening right now that literally feels exactly what you're feeling. And maybe also it could be a 52-year-old, right? But But I do think something about that moment when you're graduating college, when you're heading into the world, it's kind of a come to Jesus moment for everyone. And I think a lot of receipts, you know, come due that you have to kind of figure out, who am I going to be and how am I going to go forward? And am I going to keep going in the same way? So I just feel compassionate to those listening that really relate to that, whatever age you are, that you feel like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Something's got to shift. And I don't know, like I hear that and I go, gosh, I'm grateful for that point, because look at all of the work and the beauty that you've created because of that, and probably the healthier life that you lead now because of that moment. So I don't think those times, I think they're terrifying, but I also think they're a gift to get to that point. What would you say about that person, you know, that's listening, that's going, that is great. I don't know how to get there. Maybe I need it, but I think I'm okay. I think I've been through a lot, but I'm not very emotional. I don't feel that. I think I'm okay. What would you say to someone like that?
Yeah. I mean, certainly that story is a, you know, what I would call, like, when people describe in some ways like a rock bottom moment, or like feelings of things just really getting reoriented. And I think that those can, I mean, really can be so valuable because of the sense that we have access to really vulnerable information in a way that we might not have access when we are really kind of living from that more defensive posture that's sort of working. But for folks who are listening, and there's like this, and I encounter this all the time. I mean, people fall within, there's like such a spectrum of the human experience. And that's like, that's valid. You know, I find that one of the things that's, I would say, a hallmark of my work, especially because of coming from this sort of trauma lens, and is really honoring what I would call honoring the pace of our body. And what that sort of means is to, because I think when we're really listening to our nervous system, it has some really good information to tell us.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. So bottom line, Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. So it makes things like instant money transfers or real-time notifications of what they're spending money on, how they're spending it, manage their chores, allowance, you name it. Greenlight is the solution for you. I grew up in the day and age of saving money in my piggy bank. And as much as I would love to think that I can keep using the mason jar in our laundry room for my oldest son's allowance, it's just not really practical in this day and age. And that's where Greenlight has come in. With Greenlight, you can build your kids' financial literacy and independence because they can learn to earn, save, and spend wisely. Millions of parents and kids use Greenlight to learn how to make responsible financial choices. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/madeforthis. That's greenlight.com/madeforthis to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/madeforthis.
I want you to speak for just a minute about the nervous system in the midst of this, because I think some people hear that and they know what it is because they learned it in biology in seventh grade. But why is the nervous system so important?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, let me just, I'll give just like a really brief description, a working description of what I mean. And maybe that will help folks as they're hearing this to sort of place themselves. So generally speaking, there's a term called the window of tolerance. It was coined by Dr. Dan Siegel. And the window of tolerance is the range of arousal in which we can feel our feelings or have an experience or have a memory. And sort of like our brain and body and like our full self is more like available to us. It's sort of like what we think of when we say, yeah, like I feel like myself, you know, and it's easier from that place to sort of live in alignment with who God made us to be because we're more sort of online. When our body perceives a certain level of threat, and there can be nuance to that if you have a history of trauma or potentially other things that can affect the nervous system, when there's that feeling of potential or actual threat, we will leave our window and we will go up into either like our sympathetic nervous system. So that's like fight or flight or potentially fawning, which can look a little bit like that over accommodating to neutralize threat. If that doesn't work, then a lot of times our body will instantaneously and subconsciously drop into a dissociative place, which is when we feel sort of a little numb, disconnected. Mm-hmm. Yep. And if the threat is big enough, we can even lose consciousness. So what's important to understand is that our nervous system is always working and operating without a conscious thought.
Are you saying that's why some people had trauma when they were a little child, but they don't remember it? And maybe they were even at an age where they should have been old enough to remember it?
It can be a part of that. Yep, it sure can. I mean, dissociation can is often a mark of something that was so overwhelming to our nervous system that sometimes we don't remember it. And that can happen throughout the lifespan, but often for kiddos, they're more vulnerable because kids a lot of times can't leave, you know, the situation. It's certainly part of my story that there are elements of dissociation from periods of my childhood. And it's very common for people that I've worked with. So with this question of the nervous system, what I want folks to hear is no matter who you are, you have a nervous system. It's always working and you have a window of tolerance. And our body is always adapting to our perceived level of safety or threat. Mm-hmm. And so if you are a person like that person you described, who's like, oh, I think I'm fine. Like emotions are fine. You know, like, I don't know why this is like, does this really pertain to me? I get it, but maybe there's also this inkling, this feeling of like, but something about this feels like, oh, I'm curious. But I also maybe even without, maybe not even admitting it, but it's also like a little bit scary potentially.
Yes, 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 yes. Listen, that little feeling, that little sense, if you're that person and you're like, there is something that bothers me, pulling on that string is scary. I talk about that in the book, that it feels like the whole thing's going to unravel if I pull on this. And I would just say, let it, just let it, because I promise you on the other side of this, you become a fuller version of who you're meant to be. And all the energy you're using to stuff that down, it's exhausting you, even if you don't think it is. But keep going, because this is so good, Andy. Okay, so our nervous systems matter, and our bodies are trying to tell us something. So that person that needs to just pay attention to that little bitty feeling that feels like no big deal, what happens if they don't?
Yeah, I mean, so I think one of the things that's, you know, so tricky about this work is usually there's a reason why we've learned to not feel our feelings or to listen to them even, right? Because some of us, we think our feelings, we don't feel our feelings. And I just want to say that's a different thing.
Never done that.
Right? I mean, this is so common. People do it all the time. And I think, you know, what can happen is we get stuck in the cognitive process. The problem with that is that emotions literally live in the body.
Right.
And so when we don't feel the feeling, we actually keep them from being processed, which means your body is carrying unprocessed emotion. And so when you say, what's the cost of that? I mean, there's a big cost. I mean, one of them is, you know, there's a sense in which without the ability to, you know, tap into or honor maybe painful feelings, it also means we can't really lean into things like joy or things that feel more pleasant or comfortable to our body either. Because again, that window of tolerance isn't just for pain. If your body learns that all emotions are unsafe, then even joy feels too big and potentially too dangerous. And so what I find for a lot of people is that they get to this point where they're like, life is feeling pretty lukewarm. You know, there's so much cognitively I'm grateful for it. Cognitively, I know that's good. Or cognitively, I know that's painful. I am not able to be with and feel those feelings. And that tends to start this process of unraveling. What is that about? Where did I learn that? And what would I need to be able to feel those feelings?
This is so good. As a Jesus follower, you know, one thing we talk about a lot here is just, what's God say about it? What does God think about it? And so when I approach this subject of emotions, it was fun for me because, you know, I you're trained in counseling. I'm trained in Bible. I went to seminary for 3 years and graduated with that degree. But my side of the education spectrum gave very little theological credence to emotion or even attention, which I think is such a shame, which is one reason I did the book, because I felt like as I was more exposed to the side of counseling and therapy and neuroscience and all of that, I'm going, oh my gosh, God built our brains. All of this is reflected in the scriptures and things that he says to do, like mourn with those who mourn. So talk just a little bit about your view, your theology around emotions, why you can do what you do and know that it is pleasing to God.
Yeah, well, I think this is something that is really important to me, you know, and I love the integration of this reality. First of all, just I think we often, especially in Western culture, give a lot of credence to the divinity of God, of Jesus, which is beautiful and important. Sometimes I think we miss the humanity of Jesus. I think we undervalue that. And the truth is that Jesus came as a person, like fully human. And there is no way to be fully human without the fullness of our emotions. And so I think Jesus is this beautiful model of incarnation, right? Mm. And there's so many pieces of that that are significant. But for me, in the work that I do, there's this beautiful way in which when people have experienced things, for example, like trauma, it literally disconnects them from their humanity. I mean, this is not an exaggeration. We become less of ourselves because we have to be less. So healing is the opposite. I believe that God's heart for all of us is wholeness and fullness. And so there's a way in which when Jesus said, like, I came that they may have life and have it to the full, that's not an accident, right? That there is a way in which I think this is the picture of what it means to really become our God-given selves, is to inhabit the people that God designed us to be, not like in spite of our faith, but actually because of it, because this is what it means to inhabit the lives that God has given us. And so that has to include the fullness of ourselves and our bodies, these beautiful bodies that do so much on our behalf.
All of it is God-given, and these ideas have gotten in our minds and our culture to where we just feel guilty, right? That's the bottom line. I would say I struggle with this. Everybody I know struggles with this, that we feel guilty, that we feel sad. We feel guilty, that we feel angry. We feel guilty, that we feel afraid. And we think that is not pleasing to God. Mm. What is that part of us? Because that is also a part of us that we can't just turn off, right?
Yeah. Well, I think, like, you know, just like a lot of the work that I do, I love to bring curiosity to when something like that comes up. Because oftentimes, if we try to just barrel through it, like if we're like, oh, I feel bad that I'm sad, but just like, you're like, get away, guilt, just leave me alone. What happens is it just intensifies, right? Because that's about fear. That's about, oh, like my body is afraid that if I feel this, like something bad will happen, or that I'm not who.
Right. It's protecting us in a way.
That's right. So if we can honor that and get curious about, well, where did I learn that? And what was that about? And I think a lot of times what we find is that, you know, our culture and even sometimes especially our Christian culture can be really disembodied, right? That there is a way in which we sometimes fear living in our bodies. And I think so many of these things connect to this concept. And so for me, I think one of the things I so often invite people to is, what would it look like to have compassion towards that fear? What would it look like to steward that the compassion that God has for us towards the ways that we are afraid of inhabiting the fullness of who we are?
And that is how I healed. And I'm not saying I'm all healed up here, but in a big stuck place in my life, the help that I got was in this vein of learning that compassion for all these parts and where they've come from, rather than judging them. And I think that is my hope for all of you listening is that you feel just a deep breath. I think so much of life is just beating ourselves up because we didn't arrive or we didn't achieve or we didn't fix this or we need to solve this or this is something's wrong with our kid and we got to fix it or they're going to get in more trouble. Like everything's kind of this fix it mentality. And if we don't, it's going to crumble. And I think what I learned was, man, I am a human on a journey all the way home. And on that journey, it's going to be a bit of a mess. And when I accept that, and when I accept my finite, humanity in that, there's just a better story that I'm living. I'm living with more compassion.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for a year and a half, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is researched and developed by their in-house team of scientists, doctors, and nutritionists with decades of experience in their respective fields. So many people have asked me if AG1 is the real deal, and trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it every morning for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because their team relies on expert-led scientific research and they source their ingredients for potency and purity. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by replacing so many different supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and so much more in just one simple scoop. And I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/madeforthis. That's drinkag1.com/madeforthis. Check it out.
You wrote an Instagram post, Andy, that was so good. There was a specific line. It talked about our nervous systems and just specifically why you are in this episode. It began with just noticing our bodies, which we've talked a little bit about. But one of the things you said in that post that I thought was fantastic is once you have a sense of what nourishes you, see if you can sandwich difficult moments and experiences between goodness and resources. I thought that was gold. That was something that will change my behavior because I tend to go through whole seasons of dread where a lot is expected of me. I've got to produce a book. I've got to produce a gathering. I've got to help my kid get to this thing. And I kind of live in that, a season of dread almost. Just talk about why that specific truth is helpful to people.
Yeah. Well, thank you for naming that. I think so that particular post really comes out of the work that I call it compassionate resourcing. And it's something that is, you know, I talk a lot about in Strong Like Water, and I have a new guided journal coming out, Strong Like Water Guided Journey. And I really dive into these concepts of helping people to develop the resources that you're sort of naming around, like, what do I sandwich the hard things with? Sometimes people are like, I don't even know what that would be. You know, but in that particular post, the way that I begin that is, again, it's sort of a body-centered practice because I could tell people all day, like, here's some ideas of things that might help. And it's not to say that that's not good, but here's the thing that's so fascinating about our bodies is that our bodies will tell us the truth. If something actually nourishes you, if something actually feels supportive to you, you will experience it that way. And in that particular post, I talk about it specifically through the lens.
Hold on. I'm sorry I keep interrupting you, but you're saying gold. And I don't want people to miss it. You just said our bodies actually tell us the truth. Our emotions are telling us the truth, because that is definitely a Christian principle out there that emotions are lies and that emotions don't say anything good. So let's just pause where we're going there, because I think that is profound and needs to be addressed as well. Yeah. What's your tension in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, totally. And I know where people, I think what can be so tricky is that when we, for example, are outside of our window of tolerance and we've been suppressing our emotions, there are ways in which they can come out sideways. Certainly. I mean, certainly we can say something, do something out of a place of anger or a place of shame, or those things can happen. But here's the thing that I think is so interesting. When we learn to honor and attend to our emotions, and typically this happens within that window of tolerance, it actually gives us more choice. And it sort of is like this way of our body is constantly communicating information through our emotions. And that is a form of a truth telling, right? That it's saying to us, hey, here's something I want you to be aware of. Now, certainly, there are some complex processes that have to happen to decide, what do I do with that information? Should I say this or should I say this? So I'm not saying it's the, you know, this is not my analogy, but people have talked about like emotions like kids in your car. Like you want them in the car, but you don't want them driving, right? They're important.
That's right.
But they shouldn't be driving. And and again, that's where when we're in that window of tolerance, we have that capacity to sort
make
of
make a good decision.
Yeah. To keep the parts of ourselves that are most connected to that God-given wisdom online. Right. Yep. But I do think that they do tell the truth. They are telling a truth to you. If you are in pain, that is a truth. There's nothing that we can do to make that not true. The only thing that we can do is learn to turn towards the pain, to listen and attend, and then figure out how we work with what's come up.
So good. Okay, so back to the moments and experiences between goodness and resources. Talk about that, because this I've got to go apply today. you convicted me when I read that. I was like, I don't do that. I kind of put everything in one category. So talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I think of this like, so when I think about resources, I love the work of a psychologist named Dr. Arielle Schwartz, and she defines resources as anything that communicates safety to your body. Mm-hmm. Now, when I say that, part of what I'm saying, like this is, we're talking about this more in the realm of like psychological safety, like where our body is really connected to that window of tolerance, and we will literally feel a sense of settledness.
Yeah.
When we are connected to things that help us feel safe or supported.
This is huge.
And so one of the things that tends to be true is that we think that if we're facing something hard, we just got to gut it out. We just got to push really, really hard, and we just got to get over it, right? That's a really common refrain. And I get that there are times when we don't have a choice. So I honor that. But the truth is that if we can learn to make a practice of connecting to our resources, and that can be a lot of things. It could be like relationships in our lives. It could be spiritual practices. It could be music. It could be movement. It could be poetry. It could be good light in my living room. These are all these things that bring me into my body in a way that feels good, settled, supported. If we face hard things from that place, our potential of moving through the hard in a way that's ultimately produces resilience goes up exponentially. And so I think it's just this way of thinking, it's like it's always the goodness that does the hard, the heavy lifting. It's not the pain. It's the goodness. It's the way. And I really think that's the character of God, right? It's like pain happens. But the goodness of God comes to meet us in the pain.
That's right.
That's the miracle. That's the thing. And so there's a way in which this is this practice, this embodied practice of being with and living from that goodness.
I experienced that even this week where I kept hitting a place where I was feeling a lot of frustration at people. And rather than ignore it, we had our little cohort that we have once a month, and I decided to share that. Lots of times it's bigger things, it's bigger emotions, it's not frustration on little things that should go away. But when I shared it, it was amazing. I cried just about what my fear was, why I get so frustrated, like underneath all that. And it was so funny, and we all laughed about it at the end, and I say this in the book, it feels like magic sometimes, like how it works, but I just was able to cope better after that. They didn't tell me anything. They didn't say, Jenny, stop acting that way, stop feeling that way. They just listen and they're like, of course you feel that way. That, of course you feel a little on edge. Like, you've got so much pressure right now. And they were just so compassionate to me. And I'm telling you, like, that shifted things. It was that. It wasn't understanding something better, doing something better. It was just finding the place you're talking about, which was, in that moment, my people, and saying it out loud. I think something that I would have been embarrassed to say a while ago. And now I just say it. If, in fact, I'm most likely to say it if it embarrasses me, because I know what you're saying, that that really does set us free. And bonus, it connects us in a deeper way to people. Andy, this was amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all this with us.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
You guys, I have a special request to make. Okay? You know, on your podcast app where you can leave ratings and reviews on the podcast that you listen to? Well, it is honestly like one of Jenny and I's favorite things. It's one of those ways that we get to know you just a little bit by your reviews and your ratings, and it helps other people find out about the show. So would you go today, and if you've been listening for a while and you're enjoying the show, can you go leave a rating and review? We would so appreciate it, and we're always grateful that you're here. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Made for This podcast.